Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. Yemen, the poorest nation in the Arab world, has become the focus of a new regional war. After a Shiite rebellion, calling itself the Houthis, drove President Abed Rabu Mansour Hadi to flee to Saudi Arabia, the Saudis this week began bombing Yemen as part of their Operation Decisive Storm. If the name of the operation is reminiscent of a U.S. military campaign, it's because the U.S. is working closely with its Saudi allies in planning and logistics. At least 25 people have died so far in Yemen from the bombings. Saudi Arabia's main worry is the expansion of Iranian influence. Iran's Shia leadership is suspected of supporting the Houthi rebellion. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani condemned the military intervention, even as Houthi spokespeople denied Iranian support. To make matters more complicated, the Houthis are supporting Ahmed Ali Abdullah Saleh, the son of Yemen's former dictator, who was deposed by the Arab Spring Revolution as a new potential leader. My guest is Stephen Zunis. He's a professor of politics and international relations at the University of San Francisco, where he directs a program in Middle Eastern Studies. Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
Well, the situation is extremely complex. Let's start with what the Houthis plan for Yemen. They've taken control of the capital, Sana'a, and they're controlling large swaths of Yemen's population centers. If left to their own devices, are they planning on holding elections, taking control of the democratic process, or are they simply hoping to reinstate a dictatorship?
It's hard to say. They are a historically oppressed minority, at least in recent decades. They took up arms initially to challenge the authoritarian Saleh regime and their efforts to consolidate control in their area in the north. But they've gone well beyond their initial rebellions, defending their tribal areas, to actually move in and take over the capital of Sana'a, effectively deposing the president, and then advancing south into areas where they and their co-religionists had not historically been. A number of people who were once sympathetic to some of their initial grievances are concerned, that they've gone well beyond that and it may indeed be in league with the former dictator that they used to oppose. Personally, I think the charges of Iranian intervention are exaggerated. There are unconfirmed reports that some arms have been shipped via Iran, but as we've seen in the case of Bahrain, when that broad-based pro-democracy movement, nonviolent pro-democracy struggle, was condemned as an Iranian plot, the Saudis and others, had this tendency to define Iranian conspiracies where there aren't any. But in any case, I think their strength comes not that they have a majority support; they are a minority, but because those that oppose them are so divided, and because the Hadi government has so little credibility.
Right. Well, so you're saying that it's debatable how important Iran's role is in this, but certainly Iran seems to be at least giving moral support to the Shia rebellion. And it's interesting to see that Iran is fighting on the same side of the United States and Iraq in the battle for Tikrit against the Islamic State. Here in Yemen, Iran's on the opposite side, while the U.S. is aligning with Saudi Arabia. Meanwhile, the U.S. and Iran are having nuclear talks. This week, ongoing nuclear talks, part of a series of talks that have been happening for several weeks and months. This is a complicated mess where Iran is concerned and the U.S.
Very much so. I mean, part of it is that Iran, for better or worse, is a regional power. And the Bush administration, to a certain extent, the Clinton administration, seemed to be in denial, trying to isolate Iran, trying to think that we could basically bully them into compliance. And while there are certainly legitimate grievances on any number of policies, both foreign and domestic, by that rather reactionary clerical government, I think that I do at least give the Obama administration credit to recognize the reality that they have to work together in areas where they have mutual interests, but oppose Iran, where they see their policies as detrimental.
Well, if Iran is not overtly supporting the Houthis, who is providing them with arms, for example?
Well, again, it's very possible that there could be arms of Iranian origin. At the same time, it's important to recognize that Yemen is awash with arms. In fact, they have more guns per capita than any country in the world, except, of course, the United States. And you know, they've been in a constant state of tribal war, of ideological conflicts, a secessionist movement. I mean, it's very easy to get a hold of weapons there.
And actually, just earlier this month, the Pentagon admitted that that the U.S. military had lost $500 million worth of arms in Yemen that they had supposedly provided, in the early part of the decade. And of course, we should remind ourselves that Yemen is one of the places where the U.S. routinely drops drone bombs. Is it possible that the Houthis are simply fighting the Saudis, and both sides are in effect using U.S. weapons? Saudi Arabia is one of the U.S.'s biggest weapons buyer, and the Houthis might have gotten them from these so-called lost weapons.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, the United States, of course, has been the number one provider of arms to that volatile region for decades now, and it's yet another reminder of in addition to many of the moral and legal questions about the wisdom of the United States, sending so many weapons to an area that is so unstable.
And Stephen, how unusual is it for Saudi Arabia to lead such a military operation? I mean, we don't really hear of Saudi Arabia launching wars. Apparently, they had been in talks. We're now hearing reports they had been in talks with the U.S. for months and weeks, considering such a thing, and then launched it this week when the Houthis became close to taking over the capital. Is this something that Saudi Arabia is sort of looking for a new role in the region?
Well, it's not really new. Saudi Arabia and Egypt fought a proxy war in Yemen during the early 1960s. The Saudis have bombed the Houthis several years ago when they had one of their initial rebellions. Saudi Arabia, of course, invaded Bahrain, allying with the more reactionary elements of that monarchy and suppressing the pro-democracy movement back in 2011. The Saudis supported South Yemeni secessionists when they tried to break away and reestablish a separate country in South Yemen back in 1994. There've also been a number of border clashes where Saudi Arabia has seized some oil reserves in some disputed border areas. So Saudi intervention in Yemen is not new, though the level of this intervention is bigger than we've seen in the past.
Right, it's taken a more direct approach, a more overt approach, naming its campaign Operation Decisive Storm, like the U.S. names their campaigns. There's also reportedly a coalition of Gulf countries, including Egypt, Jordan, Qatar, Bahrain, just today Morocco apparently joined this coalition, the UAE. What are the interests, Stephen, of some of these governments to align themselves against Yemen? Is there a fear of similar rebellions hitting their own countries and sort of reflecting the kind, except it's easier to align against this sort of rebellion than it was, at least overtly, than it was against the Arab Spring democracy movements?
Well, certainly there is interest in trying to stop a rebellious movement, one that is aligned with dissident Shia elements in other countries. But what's disturbing about this is that the United States is supporting this effort, even though every nation that you have mentioned here is an authoritarian regime.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a few years ago, Yemen was a bright spot. You had this massive pro-democracy, broad-based, non-violent movement where people in this heavily armed
Stephen? And we're going to try to get Stephen back on with us as he describes the brief history of Yemen's Arab Spring Revolution, where the broad coalition overthrew Saleh, the dictator then, and elections led to Mr. Hadi, the current president, who's currently in exile. Stephen, you were saying?
Sorry, I don't know where we got cut off.
You were describing the Arab Spring Revolution and the hope and the bright spot that it represented for Yemen.
Yes, and unfortunately, what the United States did along with the Saudis is they encouraged this effort by the Gulf monarchies to to bring in the authoritarian dictator Saleh's vice president, Hadi, as the only candidate in an election, basically dismissing and ignoring a civil society. And of course, Hadi's rule, though it is the legally legitimate recognized government of Yemen, never got a lot of support, didn't have a lot of legitimacy, was seen as quite corrupt, and Saleh and his influence remained to some degree. And so when you marginalize civil society and they feel they don't have a stake in the process, it creates a power vacuum in which the men with guns end up playing a role. So there you have the rise of the Houthis, you have a rise of Al-Qaeda elements and even ISIS. And now you're having this intervention by these authoritarian regimes, again, backed by the United States. The only bright spot I've seen is the reports just yesterday that when the Houthis tried to seize Taiz, the second largest city, in their march south below Sana'a, many tens of thousands of people took to the streets nonviolently to resist the impending assault. And the Houthis backed down. Huh. So it shows even in the midst of all the chaos, the craziness, the violence, the various armed groups, there are still people in Yemen willing to engage in massive nonviolent resistance to assert their right to self-governance and to resist these armed groups that are trying to push them around.
And it's interesting, these protests haven't received as much coverage, of course, in the West, because they tend not to. Those are the kinds of things that tend not. And so when we try to understand Middle East politics, we hear about them or learn about them in a vacuum. Can the bombing campaign led by Saudi Arabia and, of course, backed very closely by the United States have the opposite effect of rallying more support around the Houthis, as they tend to then represent the defenders see themselves as the defenders of Yemen against these foreign invaders?
Yes, it could. It could also end up strengthening Al-Qaeda and extremist Salafi Sunni groups,
right,
as well. Saudi Arabia doesn't have a very good reputation in Yemen. Millions of Yemenis have been foreign guest workers in Saudi Arabia, where they have been horribly abused, mistreated. Again, and Saudi Arabia has played a bullying role over the years in terms of intervention and the like. Even though the Houthi advance is not well appreciated, is opposed by most Yemenis, that doesn't mean they necessarily welcome Saudi intervention either.
Right. The oil prices in Yemen, the Gulf region in general, jumped a little bit yesterday as a result of the Saudi operation. Yemen controls an important oil route. How serious is the potential of this conflict spreading? What is the possibility of the Saudis sending in ground troops?
Well, the threat of ground troops is a real one. They have been quite explicit about their willingness to do that. Egypt has threatened to send in some troops as well. In terms of oil prices, probably not that big a deal. Yemen has only a few oil fields, nothing much. They, as you mentioned at the outset, it is a very poor country. It's very different than the other six countries of the Arabian Peninsula, both in its poverty and also as a republic, not a monarchy. Aden is an important seaport, but the fighting has not gotten there as much. In terms of spreading, I mean, there are rest of Shia minorities in Saudi Arabia. The Shia majority in Bahrain continues to be oppressed by the U.S. and Saudi-backed regime there. One could conceivably see military intervention in Yemen against the Houthis, stimulating protests there. There have been some nonviolent protests already in Bahrain and Qatar and a couple other places regarding this. And it's unfortunate, too, because, there have been a whole number of cleavages in Yemen and elsewhere. As in a number of countries, the sectarian split, the Sunni-Shia split, is something that's fairly recent, and I think a reflection of a number of new developments in the area, where the divide and rule policies of both the United States and various governments in that part of the world have made this a much bigger deal than it was just a couple decades ago.
Well, Stephen Zunis, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Stephen Zunis is a professor of politics and international relations at the University of San Francisco, where he directs the program in Middle Eastern Studies.